Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to our new training summit, Ending HUD's Tyranny. I want to thank you so much for being here. I hope many of you had an opportunity to call into our Socialism in America program. That was ran over the last three weekends, and we just got tons of good positive comments about that because people finally were just able to call things what they are. You know, we're not talking about maybe we'll be socialists one day. We've arrived there, and it's important that we look at that face-to-face. This evening, we're going to be talking about ending HUD's tyranny. And, you know, our founding fathers created a nation, and it was a system of government that was for everybody. It wasn't just for liberals or conservatives, so our conversation can't be about Democrats or Republicans. In fact, they even devised a way or a pathway that they could get rid of slavery so that our government truly would belong to everyone. My friend Mark Kerr, I hope you guys know him at the Center for Self-Governance, he always likes to say that we're like mechanics. We the people are like mechanics on an aircraft. Everybody hears about the pilot and you hear about the shiny plane, but the aircraft mechanic is the person that keeps the whole thing going and in the air. And we the people are in charge of making sure that our system goes, that it works properly. But we've collectively dropped the ball on that. We have not paid attention. We've not paid attention to the mechanics of making our constitutional republic work. In fact, we've allowed the government to get so big that I would say we're about 1,000 times, our federal government is about 1,000 times more corrupt than a Bernie Madoff, and it's probably far more evil than all of the so-called evil corporations put together. But because we've leaned back and let that happen, a lot of people are simply ignoring this fact, and they look at the government and say, well, that's our guardian, that's our savior, those are the people who are going to bring us justice and equality. And the government cannot do any of those things. They can't bring you jobs, they can't create justice, nor can they create equality. Now, HUD's affirmatively furthering fair housing, and that's what our sessions are going to be about. It's really become the face of an evil that's far greater than any single federal agency. It kind of encompasses and encapsulates what's going on throughout the federal government. So we're here tonight to address HUD in a way that's never been addressed before. And we're going to present you with a load of information that will be helpful to you. Now, for those people that are on, in fact, I'll announce this again in a few minutes for some latecomers, we have created a guidebook for you. It's a strategic guidebook. And if you go to my website, and I'll tell you what that website is, and if you can't get there right now, that's fine. You'll have a link and you'll be able to go there after the program. But if you have access to a computer, go to my website, sustainablefreedomlab.org. So I'll say that again. It's sustainable, like in sustainable development, sustainablefreedomlab.org, and you'll see a little toolbox on the front, on the home page, a little kind of a toolbox in there on the right side of the page toward the top side of the page. And if you'll enter your email address and click in there, you'll find everything that we're going to be going over tonight is located there. If you can't get to that page, don't worry about it, because we're going to go over this together, and you'll have full access to it whenever you are able to get to a computer. So, again, we're going to follow along. This is going to be an online training course. It's over the telephone. You have all the materials that you're going to need. You go to sustainablefreedomlab.org, click on the toolbox, enter your email address to get in there, and then at the top of the page, you will see Ending HUD's Tyranny, a Strategic Guide. I'm going to ask you to print that out. So while you're doing that, while you're looking at that, and if you don't print it, you just want to look at it online, that's okay too. You can follow right along with us. While you're doing that, I'd like to introduce you to our guests for this evening. We're very fortunate to have three people with us who have been fighting both HUD, sustainable development, regionalism in their communities, and they've been just having tremendous successes, each in unique ways. And that's what I wanted to share with you. I not only want you to have an opportunity to speak to people who are out there, you know, just like so many of you are, fighting in the trenches, but at the same time give you an outline that you can follow, that you can say, wow, here's this puts it all together, so we know how in our community we can go about tackling this thing. So our first guest up this evening is going to be Mike Hoskinson. Now, Mike is from California. Mike's a real estate broker. He represents clients in residential and commercial sales and leasing. He was Delphi'd at a Huntington Beach general plan meeting back in 2014, and it didn't take Mike long to learn about regionalism and sustainable development. He's used social media, and this is so important, Mike is going to tell us a little bit about this, to assist in overturning his local city council, and he was appointed to the planning commission. I think this is paramount to keep in mind. We have control at the local level if we know how to use that. And we can use that local punch, if you will, to control what happens at the federal level. But we have to start here first. Earlier this year, Mike discovered that the regional government in California, that's called SCAG, I love that name, SCAG, that mandates low-income housing for all Southern California cities had fudged. They had fudged the demographic numbers used to drive to prove their population. So here they had this program that says, we need to know how many people you have before we invest any money. So they just fudged all the numbers, that's all. As a result of this discovery, the city of Huntington Beach refused to adopt a new housing element and is fighting the state of California and low-income shill groups to stop the forced housing on his town. So this is there's a lot going on in California that we can learn from. Mike, would you tell us for a few minutes about just what you're doing out there in California, what we can learn from it?
Thank you, John, and thanks to everybody for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it. What is happening in California? Well, first to know about California, we are the bottom of the barrel for governance. I would challenge anybody to find a worse state. We are at what I like to call a green dictatorship now, where the false belief in global warming is ruling every rule out of Sacramento at the moment. And a lot of this has to do with how they're forcing housing on all the towns. So they're definitely a linked issue. But we had found back in the previous to the 2014 election, we had a 4-3 progressive dominated city council that they started with a plastic bag ban, which is very trendy for councils all across the country. It's one of those feel-good issues that actually ends up just pissing off the locals more than anything else, and it does absolutely nothing for the environment. They forced it on the town, and then the town bit back. The town said, we don't want this in our town, and people were repeatedly coming to council telling them in no uncertain terms to repeal it, and they ignored them. And one of our conservative councilmen brought up a repeal vote in April of 2014, which the 4-3 majority just brushed him aside. And sitting in the audience was a young local man who was tired of the city council ignoring the people. And on his cell phone, he started an entity on Facebook called the Huntington Beach Community Forum. That forum has grown to have 17,000 participants, and all of them vetted to be city residents. And it has become the social force that really dictates where information flows in the town. So now the bad guys essentially don't have control of the narrative anymore. So, I mean, I don't know, John, how deeply do you want me to go into the details of that or whatnot?
Well, tell me a little about that narrative. Tell me a little about where you ended up there. Yeah, just a little bit more.
So the narrative essentially in our town, we know that, you know, every place from top to bottom has a narrative that usually is not any respect of the truth. The narrative in our town was whatever the special interest told their bought and paid for council people to say. So we've got two different narratives, which are environmental progressives and then Chamber of Commerce dominated development types, so which we are fighting at the current election right now. So at the moment, it was dominated by progressives. We used the Facebook forum that had been created, and even at the time, it only had between 2,000 and 5,000 members during the election cycle. But we used that to directly challenge the council people we were wanting them to change. They went dark. They refused to engage the public, and the good ones that were successful engaged the public. So that's a big note to these politicians now, that they could simply not duck and cover anymore from the public on these forums. The people that are successful engage, the ones that are failures do not. So
exactly.
The end result in 2014 was we unseated a 12-year very popular councilwoman who was our version of Hillary Clinton. She's just a nasty piece of work. And her cohort that was voting with her and replaced both of them with a super conservative, great guy who in the 2 years since then has become the leader of our town, essentially. And he's the kind of guy that everybody wishes would step forward, a businessman, a Marine, a family man, and a guy that's just, he's a true leader. So we were fortunate to have him to run, and he's become the kind of leader that everybody wishes. And now we are running two more folks in this current election. So if we're able to put them, you know, get them elected, we're going to have a true now citizen control of our town.
Yeah, this is really active governance. This is active civics at work right here. I mean, and what Mike is doing in his community, we can do these and others. If we cannot convince the local public officials that HUD, for example, just use our HUD case that we're discussing this evening, if we can't convince them of the dangers of this and the value of property rights and the value of local autonomy and what that means if they surrender that just to get a couple of bucks in grant money, then maybe the next step is we have to remove some of these people. And exposure is one way to do that. Now, thanks a lot, Mike. We're going to come back to you. We really want your input as we go through this outline here. Before I introduce Smith, I just want to remind everyone that if you will log on to my website, if you can, right now, if you're able to do that. If not, that's fine. If you can log on to sustainablefreedomlab.org, you'll see a little toolbox in the right column there. Click on that. I think you have to enter your email address, and then that will take you to a page that is just loaded with information that you'll be able to use to fight affirmatively furthering fair housing in your community. At the very top of that page is a red highlighted link, Ending HUD's Tyranny, Strategic Guide. It's a short guide. It's about 5 or 6 pages long. If you can print that out, that's what I will be going over, so we can actually kind of be reading right along together. If not, you can bring it up on your screen and look at it, or just, you know, we'll be glad to talk you through it. So either way, that's Ending HUD's Tyranny. Now, at this point, I'd like to introduce a very special person, Smith Young. We only met a while ago, and it was really over this whole thing of affirmatively furthering fair housing. And Smith has just done a tremendous job of gathering information about this. He has a website that you'll find recommended on our website. When you go to the page that I gave you, you'll find Smith's site there called AFFH.net. You'll be able to go there and get loads of information as well as what we're providing you with. Now, Smith recently retired. He was an IBM senior executive architect, and he resolved complex IT problems and provided technology solutions for some of America's largest corporations. He traveled every week to client locations throughout the country, and in doing so, it provided him with the opportunity to directly observe the deterioration that's caused by HUD and the changing landscape caused by high-density housing. So he's seen this first class all over the country. After being on the road for 20 years, you name almost any city, and Smith can tell you what the negative effects of HUD are on that city. So Smith is a huge resource for us all. Smith now spends his time researching the nationwide effects of HUD and lobbying entitlement communities in his home state of Colorado. Smith regularly visits public officials and local government staff workers to oppose affirmatively furthering fair housing. Smith is the kind of guy that gets into the weeds. When he says something, it's right, because if it isn't right, he doesn't say it. And a lot of people don't like that, because you're going to find it hard to contradict Smith on a detail. And I just love the accuracy with which he goes about gaining his information. Smith, can you tell us just a couple of the highlights of what you're doing that's different that might be helpful to our listeners as they try to push back against HUD in their communities?
Sure. And, John, thanks for explaining my motivation for all of this. So, yeah, I think one of the things you really wanted me to address is the is finding the money when a community stops taking grants. There's a couple of things I want to touch on, but you know, to just provide the continuity of kind of what you were looking for, is that, you know, I'm in Colorado and in Douglas County, since I started this, when, you know, HUD came out in July of last year with the new AFFH rule, and that's what prompted it. Got a lot of attention at the time because I mean, in the media. And that's when I got involved with it when I first started the website. Since then, I pretty much decided to focus on my local community and in Colorado, even though the website itself is nationwide. So within Douglas County, we finally got to a point, it was in the end of June, where our county commissioners had to vote on whether to accept or decline HUD grants. And so I had established a relationship, and putting myself in the county commissioner's shoes, what I realized is one of the real problems that needs to be addressed is what do you do for the recipients of the grants? And so part of what, so myself and a few other close friends and activists who actually spoke at the hearing, essentially part of the proposal was, half of it was talking about the nature and the oppressive nature of how local governments are affected and the legal liabilities of AFFH, but the other half of it was addressing the funding, because we were actually outnumbered by the number of groups that were there saying what their nonprofit did. What I proposed was, and this was just basically brainstorming with, and it was that we would set up a matching fund for donations. And what that actually has since included is working with the staff, since they voted against it, is they found themselves suddenly in a position of what do we do? And so a lot of good things are coming out of that. We found that there's a national organization in Douglas County, and it's nationwide, so it's repeatable for those communities that take HUD grants, is that it's called Douglas County Community Foundation. And the Community Foundation is out of New York, but it's an umbrella for all the nonprofits. So what the county is going to do is they are effectively going to work with this umbrella organization, and we're setting up a matching fund so that when people want to contribute to the current grant recipients, we're going to be finding others to match the funds. So if when we talk about HUD and the effect of AFFH, it's easy not to think about what the repercussions are later. So the source of funding becomes important. So as we're making progress and we can really establish this as being successful, we expect that this is to be repeatable in a lot of communities around the country to say, when you drop your grant, your HUD grants, we've got an alternative for you. And there's several. We're looking at the Ronald McDonald House. This is the group that if you go into a hospital and you've got family that needs housing, it's a national organization that goes to employers for donations. And they're here and they're really everywhere. And we're looking at organizations like that to really help in finding the funding to replace the HUD grants.
Let me hop in here for just a second. This is so critical because we're going to go through an outline and that starts with, how do I start from day one? We're going to do all that. But I wanted to introduce our guests and go through some of these critical points that they've brought out, because, first of all, as Mike just has proven to us, you can flip these boards, you can flip these councils if you can get the community aware of what's going on, and later on he's going to go into more detail about how he's been able to do that. And Smith is saying one of the biggest complaints that you're going to find, they'll say, well, okay, we've agreed, we're not going to take the HUD money, now what are we going to do? And from day one you can able to say, you can very lightly say or very easily say, well, there are other alternatives out there. So then you may have to work through that once you've beaten the HUD issue back. But the whole essence of what we're doing here, the essence of the last three programs that we had with Socialism in America and so forth, is this idea that we have got to stop depending on the federal government. And what Smith has done here is he's working very closely with the people in his community. And by the way, he's been working closely to stop HUD, too, to stop the acceptance of AFFH. So he's been a part of this process right along. And now they're saying, well, where are we going to get the money from? Well, guess what? There are ways to get that money. And when you cut the financial strings to the federal government, you bring the government to its knees. There's nothing else they can do. They hold money over your head. So that's the piece that we have to control. Go ahead, Smith. You want to wrap it up, and then we'll move on. I'm sorry.
Sure. I think where this is going to end, because we're in the process of doing this now, but we really need to establish a precedence where this is successful, so that you, when you go in front of your city council or county commissioners, you can say, look what Douglas County is currently doing. And the staff at the county was so optimistic about this, they actually think that there's a chance we might raise more money than the grants currently received from HUD.
Amazing. That is amazing.
Yeah, and we want it to be a repeatable process. So I'm not just reporting on a success we've had here, but something that we basically can repeat and use to essentially provide an incentive to the elected officials to say no to taking the grants.
Exactly. Smith, thank you so much for that. And again, we'll be looking forward to your input as we go through the outline in a few minutes. Al, before we get to you, let me go back and just repeat for our audience, or for latecomers to the audience here. We'll shortly in the bottom of the hour, around 7:30 Eastern here, we're going to be going through an outline of a way that you can tackle this problem of getting rid of HUD, and for that matter, most of this federal stuff in your federal interventions into your local communities. And that outline can be found online at my website. It's sustainablefreedomlab.org, sustainablefreedomlab.org. If you log on there, on the right panel, you will see a little toolbox. Click on that, and you enter your email address, and then you can download. When you get to the page, you'll see in red, Ending HUD's Tyranny, a Strategic Guide. If you click on that and download it, that's what I'm going to be reading from. The rest of the material that you see on that page, those are all links that will be left there for you for your access. They explain pretty much everything you're going to need to know about HUD, and that we'll be adding lots and lots and lots more information along with explanatory text in front of it so you know what each piece is. But right now, let me jump over here to our friend Al Freck. Al is our East Coast contingent. Al, thank you for being here from New Jersey. Dr. Al Freck is a New Jersey licensed psychologist. And he was the director of health and counseling services and a project director for Ramapo College of New Jersey alcohol and other drug prevention programs until he retired just a few years ago. Now, Dr. Freck has his PhD from New York University in 1980. He was in private practice in psychology in New Jersey throughout his career. Dr. Freck has served as a regional coordinator for the United States Department of Education's network addressing collegiate alcohol and other drug issues, and he was a chairman of the New Jersey Higher Education Consortium for Alcohol Education and Prevention. After he retired in 2007, Dr. Freck co-founded the North Jersey Regional Tea Party and became active in local and national political organizations focusing on the role of federal government, including Congress, in weakening local government control. That sounds familiar, right? That's exactly where we are. Most recently, Dr. Freck worked together with the Wayne Township public officials to help them realize the risks of accepting HUD grants. The township released an official rejection of HUD-related grants, and a lot of this had to do with a long-term continuing effort that Dr. Freck put in to make this successful. Al, can you tell us a little bit about your successes and something about that long-term game and the relationships that you established to finally meet success and have them realize what HUD was?
Sure, John, and thanks for everybody listening in. You know, this goes back a ways, John, because I remember, and if you probably remember, is when you did your first DVD, which was False Choices, I believe.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you invited a group of us down to see what you had done. It wasn't finished yet. It was in video form. And that's where I first heard about what was going on. And we're talking about sustainable development, talking about Agenda 21, all that kind of stuff. So so I first cut my teeth on some of your work there and got very interested in that. So talking about the long term, it was maybe about 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago then, that we heard that the We heard that the county, Passaic County in New Jersey, was re-upping their membership in the International Council on Local Environmental Issues, called ICLEI, and that was part of the group that would sink their tentacles into every town and community under the new name of sustainability. So we worked with the council in our town, a group of us, and I wasn't even leading that at that point. We worked with our town council to pass a resolution urging the county to get out of that membership. Then we went to the county, and we had serial presenters. You got 3 minutes, so we had to line up our people and all presented this. Make a long story short, they did terminate their membership in that. That was a small step. Obviously, we didn't think that was going to slow down the machine, but it was a slow step. It was a small step. And then after that, I guess my engagement with our own town council persisted over time. We had a number of high-density housing units, which is all part of HUD. We fought that. We testified. We brought up issues. We won a few of those and turned back a few. And, of course, they keep coming. But that was over the last 3 or 4 years. And then more recently, in the last, like, year and a half, 2 years, I came to understand that there was a new community development block grant, the CDBG, HUD grant, that was coming up for renewal. They were going to apply again under the new rule, the July 2015 rule. And that's when a number of us got together in more than one town, and we kind of brainstormed. And then we did a lot of work behind the scenes. Personally, what we did was contact, and I had known a number of the council people because I'd been in front of them on these other issues. So we sent them, first of all, we talked to them a little bit about this personally. Then I sent the your AFFH in 5 minutes video, and I followed up with some other articles, little bits, you know, like in sales, you drip on people, you drip, 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 drip on them. And then finally, I decided that it was important to appear before the council. We only get 5 minutes. You can only speak at the in the public portion of the meeting. So I went there and took my 5 minutes over and over and over again for every council meeting, and did that about six times, I guess, over the course of a couple months. And finally, and in that time, I had also sat down with the mayor, talked to him about it. Wasn't quite sure he was sold on this, but he did take the material that I had given him that I'd gotten from sustainablefreedom.org, and he said, I'll give that to the attorney. Make a long story short, I was prepared, and I think we could have had the council vote down any proposal that was coming up from the mayor to go ahead with that CDBG grant, but the mayor decided, and he had told me he was not going to ever bring that up while he was the mayor again. So that died. So that was a nice success we had in that. And then I must tell you that with a couple of other towns, we went to two other towns, two other town councils. And I can go into details a little later on what happened. One council, they were ready to do it. We spoke there. We did the same thing. We presented all our information. We quoted from the Federal Register, and we quoted from the guidebook, just to make sure it wasn't just they thought it was our opinion on things. And so we got one town to reverse themselves, and they were ready to go on this, and they backed off, and they voted it down. We have another town who was totally unfamiliar, so unfamiliar that they decided I would start to catalog the questions that are good indicators that these folks are not up to speed on what they should be up to speed on. And they voted first against it, or they tabled it. Then they came up and voted for it. And now we're seeing if it's possible at all to get a revote on that. We don't know if that's going to happen or not. But in summary, it took, took information. We knew our stuff. We were persistent. We went forward. And I think that's where we're at right now with that. We'll see. In the meantime, we've had requests from other groups to to come and talk to them. We've done that, and what I do is I do your AFFH in 5 minutes. I show that, and then I have an outline for it, and I go back over it, and I fill in all the details of the gaps so it makes sense.
All right, great. I'm going to pick it up here because you've slid right into the next part. So it's perfect. You've done my job for me.
Okay.
Let me just recap that just a little bit, Al. This is persistence. We've known each other for years now, and like you say, you've helped in evaluating videos and works and so on and so forth to fight this fight. Al has established a relationship over the years with many of these public officials. And in time, some of the public officials come and maybe they go, but Al is still there, and he's kind of been a consistent figure throughout this, and he's built a reputation. And that's why other communities in New Jersey are saying, hey, can you come over here? Can you talk for us? And what's happening is they're dropping out too. So what we're doing, we're creating a snowball, and once we get, I'm not going to put a number on it because I truly don't know what the number is, but once we create a certain number of communities that are pulled out, and you start taking these letters from community A, and you show it to community C over here, oh, this county dropped out, this town dropped out, and here's why they did, that begins to build an awareness of what's going on. So we're going to dive right into it. And Al, thank you so much for that. I want to come back. I hope I remember to ask some of those questions that you talked about a moment ago. We want to see just how uninformed or informed your community officials are. But the one thing to keep in mind as we go into this strategy, I call it ending HUD's tyranny, the strategy. As we go through this outline, we must, in what we do, be truthful. We cannot exaggerate, we cannot anticipate, we cannot second guess. We have to get it right, because you're going to have a bevy of people coming down from the federal government or from planning organizations, some well-informed, some very ill-informed, who are going to have all kinds of reasons to want to try to shoot down what you're saying. And you're not going to have a problem as long as you always stick with what's provable. And that's why I've created this. That's what this whole training session is all about. In accompaniment of our training here tonight, we have this site that we've set up on Sustainable Freedom Lab. If you go into that toolbox, when you enter that toolbox and go into the page, you'll find an entire page of link after link after link after link of all the documentation that you need to expose exactly what's happening in HUD. So let's start by going through that right now. What I'm looking at is that strategic guide that I hope many of you have downloaded called Ending HUD's Tyranny. It's the red link after you go into the toolbox that you'll see right near the very top there. And you'll see at the top, I say there's four steps to our strategy here. And gentlemen, as I get into this four steps, feel free to jump in and offer your own suggestions, because that's people really don't want to hear too much of me out there. You can hear, I'm easy to hear. We need to hear other people. The four steps are preparation, presentation, professionalism, and persistence. I think everything that we're doing to reverse HUD in our community, to reverse the damage that the federal government is attempting to do, can be broken down into those four different categories. So we're going to start with preparation. And if you look in the toolkit, if you're online and you're able to scroll down, you'll see in bold letters there, you'll see preparation, and it follows right along with what's in this on the outline in the strategy guidebook that you downloaded. So we talk about learning and teamwork, how to develop political champions, how to create an information distribution network. All of this information is the core of what you need to be prepared. I think it was Al who said, if I'm not mistaken, I apologize if I'm wrong, that you have to be prepared before you go out there. You've got to get that information down. So if you look on this, on the guide that we've handed out here, the very first thing it says is watch the AFFH in 5 minutes video. Now, there's a link to it on the page here that I'm on the Ending HUD Tyranny page online. there's a link here that says, this link takes you to a 5-minute video explaining the basics of AFFH. If you click on that, I wouldn't advise doing it right now. That takes you right into the video, and you can watch that. Now, this video is designed to keep it very simple. Sometimes you'll have 5 minutes. Sometimes you'll only have 3 minutes to speak in front of a public official. And if it's 3 minutes, you can clip the video. Just show part of this thing to get the gist of it out there. But what I've done is consolidated a rather complex topic into a very simple explanation that really a child can understand. So if you play that, that will open the doorway for you. If you have an opportunity to go a little bit further, maybe you have a meeting with some friends and you can invite a public official. You don't need to be a genius on affirmatively furthering fair housing. The next link down there is a 50-minute presentation that I gave earlier this year in South Carolina at Clemson University. And this is kind of neat because it goes back and it also describes Agenda 21 just a little bit. You'll find I don't like to go into that an awful lot because I don't want to get people sidetracked on trying to figure out, is that real, is it not real? And I'd rather talk about what they can touch, see, feel, and see what's going to happen here in the local community. But that explains it all, and it's about a 45, 50-minute presentation. So you can get a group together and play that. If you'll go on to our property value defense link, when you're on the Sustainable Freedom Lab website, if you look at the top toolbar, you'll see three words there, property, value, defense, in a line. It's in a little line with a whole bunch of other stuff, home, resources, store, videos, and so forth. That link gives you the latest up-to-date information on HUD and what's going on. We punch it right in there. I write different articles and so on, and we have other guests who write articles and do research for us. And you'll find that information in there that you can access. And I recommend going back at least a couple of times a week to see if there's any new information that's in there or coming to this link to see if there's new information in here that you can access. There are certain websites that we highly recommend that you go to. This website, Sustainable Freedom Lab, the one I just pointed to was the property value defense there. But also, Smith has put together a tremendous website called Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing. It's just AFFH.net. I highly recommend you go there. It's easy to remember, AFFH.net. Go there, and you'll find a load of information that you can also use. So between these two sites, three sites actually, you've got just a mass of information that you'll be able to use. Now, gentlemen, if you've used any of this information that I'm talking about right now, can you share that with our audience? I don't know who's actually used some of the links that we're talking about. I think Al, you mentioned, Smith, you may have mentioned you've used that. Can you share how that's been successful for you or not?
Well,
sure. I've actually shared your this is Smith. I've shared your videos more than once. The 5-minute video is extremely important for people who are just spinning up and want to understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a good basic to just to get people going so they know what's going on. Now,
I really should mention. You know what I think of as I say that is the effect on attorneys. Because what I find is that the city councils, the county commissioners, when they've got something that when they don't know what to do, they look at the county attorney and they say, what's your opinion on this? Because we're talking about the legal liabilities and how the local government's affected. And so that video really empowers information for even the attorneys for the local governments. And who I believe you should point out are key targets for people who we really want to affect.
We're going to go into that in a few minutes under presentation. That's one of the targets that you want to have is you need to develop relationships with those attorneys. So thank you for bringing that up, Smith. We're definitely going to go into that. So I spent a little time here under this section, preparation, and under the subheading learn. You have to know your topic because when you go into the community and you begin to speak, you're going to become the go-to person, or the people that you know there will become the go-to person. And like I said before, we don't get to screw it up. There seems to be the people who promote this stuff, they can make mistakes and misstatements and misinform people all day long, and they seem to be able to get away with it. But we don't have the license to do that. So, and there's nothing
John,
wrong with having a reputation for being accurate. Yeah, Mike.
I want to jump in here real quick. You know, one of the things that I found getting involved in activism is I read the documentation. So if there is a bill or a law or like I read all of our AB 32, SB 375 laws here that are the global warming laws, and you will find a treasure trove of material to use against the laws. So if you're in your county or town and your councilman or assembly person is bringing things up, you know, jokingly, like the old, the congressman said, read the bill. He laughed at us. Well, yeah, read the bill, because you will find things that you can destroy the bill with. So your part of your prep is being the person that's willing to go there and read through the material, give it to your councilman of choice or your champion or whoever that person is, and enable them to fight on your behalf if you're not that person.
That's excellent information. Yeah, very often, and the documents that they signed for affirmatively furthering fair housing, I can't tell you how many officials I've spoken to who said, oh, no, we're not obligated in any way. We just get the money and we have to build some affordable housing. I said, wait a minute, here's your signature, and two paragraphs ahead, it said you agree to do nothing that's inconsistent, materially inconsistent with HUD's goal to affirmatively further fair housing. I said, you just signed off on that. Oh,
exactly.
You know what? They didn't even know they signed off on the agreement. So Mike is absolutely right. You want to read their documents. You need to learn. Yeah, who's that?
That was Al.
Yeah.
I just wanted to jump in, but go ahead, finish your sentence there.
You in here you'll find under Learn, I also put links to numerous Stanley Kurtz articles. He's done some brilliant work on this, and I want you to be able to read and access this stuff that makes it very easy reading. There's some legal analysis here from several different mainly from a law firm in Washington, D.C. called Relman, Dane, and Colfax. Mm-hmm. Get to know that name. That's one of the premier civil rights law firms in the country. And if your city or your community accepts a grant and they don't abide by affirmatively furthering fair housing, these could be the guys that they face in court. So that's a great place to go to get information. So we have all those links, and they tell you exactly what AFFH is. And there's also links to two different PowerPoint presentations. So just in that first section of the website alone, you will be more equipped to talk about affirmatively furthering fair housing than most people in HUD are, because they simply don't have all this data in one place. Go ahead, Al, because I'm going to jump down to teamwork next.
Yeah, okay. No, I just want to quickly say that one of the things I tried to do when I was speaking in front of a council, and I've spoken in front of like three different councils so far, is to say right up front, look, this is just not my opinion about this. And I had certain sections that I would quote from the Federal Register and from that 377-page HUD guidebook that made it very clear on what they were trying to do, and things that they would never believe if I just said that, and I didn't have the primary source right there. So I always felt that was important, and that's what I did. In fact, in one council meeting, another town, I actually said, look, you've been talking about this HUD guidebook of 377 pages. I said, I'm actually probably the only person here that's actually read that. And so they looked at me, and then I went through the sections that were important. So just very quickly, that's all I wanted to say.
That's a really good point.
Their document.
I'm going to move pretty fast here. This is a long outline, and we've the clock is ticking away here, so I'm going to have to move rather quickly with these points. By the way, there are going to be other programs. We're going to go into a lot of detail on this. This is we've had so much requests from people. We need more. We need more. We need more. So we're going to have HUD's Ending HUD's Tyranny Strategy. We're going to go forward. There's going to be another program coming up. And then once we do that, we're probably going to have them on a monthly basis. So just watch your inbox, and we'll clue you into all of this stuff. Team building. Don't try to go it alone. It's a long, weary road, because it's going to take a while to turn these communities around. They've been taking these grants for decades, and you're trying to turn their thinking around. You're not just changing an idea. You're not just changing a grant. You're literally changing a local official, public official's culture. And that may take a little bit of time for you to do. So you want to build a team. And I put some criteria down there that you can read. It's like building any team. I built 25 for 25 years in corporations, I would build teams. And it was always the same thing. You don't need a lot of people to change the world. You need just a handful of people. Three people, four people, five people is enough to make a massive difference. You want people who are similar-minded. They have the same goals. They have the same interests that you do. And the people can either have the time or make the time. And that's so important. Do they have the time to get involved with what you're trying to do? And are they willing to make the time? Now, you'll find out it doesn't take as much time as you might think. We've invested a load of our time to try to lay all this documentation out, so you don't have to do that. And I can't tell you how much time it takes to do research and get this documentation together. I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours goes into the research piece of it. If this is all done for you, it takes a massive load off of your plate. Just learn how to use, you know, we put up here. And give me suggestions. If I can do this better, if this can be laid out in a way that's more user-friendly for you, email me, send john@sustainablefreedomlab.org, and let me know, because this is really for you that we've created this. You want to have people that complement your talents. For instance, if you're really good at research and you want to do that, then find somebody who's good at talking in front of other people. If you have somebody who's good at talking, find someone else who's good at marketing, creating flyers, doing colorful ways to get the message out. I want to move on from teams, but does anybody have like a comment they want to make about team building or not going it alone?
Yes, definitely. One thing that we did at the beginning, now, by the way, our team in Huntington Beach was comprised, the core of us was three people. And it remains the same, the three of us. And now we've got other folks in the outer rings that we deal with, but the core tiny group of us is just three people. So, I mean, keep that in mind. You can have a tremendous effect if you have just a few of the right folks that are focused on what matters and doesn't waste your time. But one thing I would tell people is I just happened in the early stages to find some political training I took from a group called Campaign for Liberty. And we've also heard about the Center for Self-Governance, which is another equally good group. But the thing to know is it helps to get the training, because like anything, you wouldn't become a brain surgeon overnight or a carpenter or anything else. You're getting into a new thing here, so you need training from some folks who can really help you focus. So we did multiple levels of Campaign for Liberty, and we really recommend that training.
Yeah, I praise that, and well as Center for Self-Governance. Mark was on our program last week. Mark Kerr, one of the co-founders of Center for Self-Governance, they do different layers and tiers of training people how to get engaged in active civics. So this is where you're actually physically making changes. And I haven't got the time, but he's got a laundry list of bills that they've been able to reverse, changes that they've been able to make in the legislatures, overcoming different political challenges that we have, all controlling it from this local level. So that's so important. Step number three under preparation is develop a political champion inside the organization you're dealing with. So if you have public officials there, you need some people on the inside, and I'll say the way we always said it in business, you want somebody who wants you to succeed as much as you do want you to succeed. Somebody who is on your side. And then when you have a champion, get another one, because things change in the political environment. People get voted in and out of office. People change their votes, change their minds. So you've always got to not only have somebody on the inside, you got to have other people on the inside watching and it kind of being an inside monitor for you there. Guys, would anybody want to comment on that? I know you have done a lot of this all day. I know Smith, you've worked that very heartily. I know, Mike, you are on the inside, and of course,
yeah,
Al, you too.
I guess what I have to say real quick, John, this is Smith, is that with regard to developing political champions, you don't always win. Like, so far in Colorado, I think my score up to about 2 weeks ago was 2 out of 2, Castle Rock and Douglas County, but I went down to El Paso County, where Daryl Glenn is now running for Senate. And he's come out opposing AFFH.
Hello?
Hello?
We lost everything. Everybody there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I'm here. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Smith, what happened? Smith? I think we lost Smith.
Okay.
The NSA got him finally.
Hey, John, I can just tag on to that if you want.
Go ahead, tag on. Yeah, that'd be great. Just go ahead, Al.
That in the three different town councils, we always had somebody, at least one person, sometimes more, who was willing to side with us, support us, take the information, talk to other council members. And so it was vital that we had these so-called, what you call champions in there, but people who you had relationships with.
You have to build those relationships. And I know in some cases, people have gone to lunch with them, gone out to ball games. And I'm not saying you have to do that necessarily, but you do have to have someone on the inside of that organization that has their thumbprint on the heart on the heartbeat of what's happening, so you can share information as you move forward. Can I mention
something real quick too? That
yeah, Mike.
You have to know what the battlefield is. You have to know what you're up against. So in our particular town, we found that really the worst scenario that we're, the thing we're up against is a Chamber of Commerce and their long tentacles into the business community. So we know that we're always fighting those guys who are spending tens of millions of dollars in the background for their developers and their business contacts, for folks who are really working their inside contacts. We just got another confirmation of a guy who used to be a mayor who is now, using his contacts as a consultant and tried to milk a local businessman for $200,000 in consultancy fees to get a project approved. So you just have to know who the players are and what the playing field is.
Exactly. Thank you so much. I'm going to zip right along to the next one. And as I said, there are going to be follow-up training programs, and we're going to go into each of these in more depth so that everybody has an advantage to learn. But right now we need to give an overview of everything and get all of the materials in your hands so you know what to do with them. Mike, I'm going to call on you for this one. Let me just set it up. You have to have an information distribution network. It's fine if you and I and even the people on this phone call right now, if we know what HUD is doing in communities, what happens to local property rights, how they're able to overturn voters' decisions as they have in Rockford, Illinois, and some other communities. It's one thing. But if we can't telegraph that into the community, then it just dies. It's not enough to get that snowball rolling. Mike, will you tell us exactly what you were able to do in your community that was able to get so much traction?
Well, like we mentioned earlier, after the forum had started, we decided to use it, and I jokingly called it a counter-Alinsky program on the bad guys that we were trying to unseat, that we basically used Alinsky's rules for radicals against them, which was a heck of a lot of fun, by the way, to see the people that usually got to use it, how it brought them down. But again, it was the availability of the network that we used for that purpose, and really the purpose of just asking questions of these people that we knew they would never answer in public and thus discrediting them. So they brought themselves down, essentially. But we needed that public forum to enable us to do that. So this is the critical thing, is creating this. And I'm going to develop a white sheet, like you've done for your PowerPoint here, that breaks down the steps that we took to, start that, use it going forward. And perhaps we could even do another session entirely for that, because it's so deep. It really, I think the critical thing almost is not just creation of it, but human psychology and understanding what motivates people and how to help the town get to the good place, because people will fight you to death for things that are good for them if they perceive there's some sort of partisan slant to it or something like that. So there's a lot of psychology that goes on to help people get to the place we all really want to be.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And can you make that white sheet available to us so we can get it posted up here on the toolbox?
Absolutely. I'll be sending it to you to distribute to everybody.
Oh, wonderful. That'll be just wonderful. Thank you so much. The next step here is you have to know your goal. If you're going to go through all this effort, you have to have a specific purpose in mind. For instance, are you just being informational? Do you want to expose affirmatively furthering fair housing to your community? Is that the goal, or just make sure that the public officials are aware? Are you trying to get a no vote on applying for HUD funds in the very beginning? Or is that what you're shooting for? Do Do you want to have a policy change? You know, some communities will issue a resolution and say, well, we're not going to take any HUD money. And, of course, you know, resolutions, there's no real teeth in there. They can take it anyway. But if you have a policy change, that might change things. Does your community even allow for a policy change? Do you even have a policy on the types of grants that you accept or do not accept? Now, we have information on that. In fact, I'm working with someone right here in Tennessee right now. We're putting together some boilerplate documents that we will post up here on the website that will show you what we mean by policy. This has been used very successfully in some communities to basically say we can't take the money. It's that we don't care how much HUD money is offered, we're not allowed to take that unless we go out and have a vote and change our policy. So we'll make you aware of that as soon as we get it up, and that'll be another tool that you'll be able to use. The last section I have here under preparation is prepare an elevator speech. You have to have some way to have a speech that excites people's interest. The basic rule of thumb is you want to introduce affirmatively furthering fair housing in a way that's short, it's captivating, gets people intrigued and wants to know more. You want it to make it easy to remember and easy to repeat. It's just like you were marketing a slice of bread. How can I say this in a way that people will keep talking about my product? Well, in here, the product that we're trying to sell is an idea. An idea that if you accept this money, you're going to lose your property. You potentially can lose your zoning rights, the ability to control how your land use in your community, have your local officials' zoning authority overturned, and you can even be nudged into a community that ultimately will have an unelected council running it. So there's so much at stake here. Now, I did put a couple of examples, and again, I'm not going to go over all of these because they're on the website. You'll be able to download all of this and see it. But one example is, did you know that HUD can now force public officials to overturn voters' decisions? HUD can now force public officials to overturn voters' decisions. It's good to have an elevator speech that's a question, because that sets it up so that somebody has to respond to that. Did you know that HUD can force public officials to change your zoning and land use regulations? So again, a simple little statement. And what you need to do, I'm going to toss this back to Mike here for just a minute, because he said something yesterday, I think is very, very salient to this. We can win these battles, and we can bring the left and the right together if in the process of winning the battle we identify something that they care about. So if you're talking about a regulation that might be changed, well, you know, that's going to turn regulation SB 31 into SB 34. They don't care. It doesn't mean anything. If you're going to say, well, we don't want that in my backyard, you're going to get a lot of pushback on that. But if you can find a topic that people can feel and will get under their skin, you will unite them. And if you stop talking about, if we don't talk about left and right as issues, just this is an issue we all care about, it'll make a difference. Mike, do you mind, you know what I'm talking about, our conversation the other day on this?
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, for example, we found in the course of all this meeting of folks and getting involved in government and whatnot in our town, that there was a 100% winner issue, which was high-density housing. And we distilled it down to, we just say HDD now. Everybody knows what we're talking about. And you cannot find a regular citizen, a non, you know, special interest connected citizen that says they're for that. And in fact, they hate it. So we said, look, why do we need to go and bring all this other issues into it if we're trying to help elect good people? Let's focus on very succinct issues that cross boundaries, ideological boundaries, which is so difficult today. So let's focus on the things we all agree on. And then once folks are trusting of you, then you can bring your other issues that might be a touch more divisive. I just had a long conversation yesterday with a gal who's running for office in a town near me. Good conservative lady, you know, good conservative Christian, nice gal. But she's running on an anti-abortion platform. And I just told her, I said, you're never going to win. I said, your issue is too divisive. The public will not accept that. So you're walking in with a deficit. You're just hobbling yourself. And whatever it is, you want to start a fight in Huntington Beach, talk about plastic bags. It's a super divisive issue that half the public goes, ban them. The other half says, you're never getting my plastic bag. So stay away from plastic bags, you know, at least in the beginning, because ultimately you have to be in office to govern. You know, it's all once you, if you're outside the castle walls, you're nowhere, you know, so you have to get in power on some level to be able to help move good ideas forward.
Yeah, I think this is so important. It's getting the people together. We so often, we know what we're trying to fight, and oh, I don't want to lose my property rights, and I don't want to lose our zoning control. But you may find that a lot of people don't even know what land use means, what land use regulations are. So somehow that has to be put into terms that they understand. Mm-hmm. You won't be able to fire your gun on your own property. Maybe that's something that your community is, I'm thinking of a county out a little east of me here, that would be a big thing. I mean, I can't shoot my rifle in my backyard, that's a problem. But if you can find a hot-button issue like this that people can almost universally relate to, that has not been turned into a divisive issue, then you've got, I'd say, 30% of the battle under your in the rearview mirror already. So you want to try to be able to set that up. Now, I see we're at the 1 hour mark here, and I wanted to leave about 15 minutes for people to ask questions. So we're going to do this. Let me just say that if anybody in the audience has some questions that they want to ask, you know, just let us know. CJ will get that on the board there, and he'll know that you have some questions. So I just want to give you. We're going to ask not right away, but in about 4 or 5 minutes, we're going to ask for some of those. Did one of the guests have something to say just now? Did I hear that? No?
Nope.
Oh, okay. John,
this is Smith.
Hey, Smith.
Is this where you have to tell people to hit #6?
Yes, that is. Q&A session. Sorry. Okay. Yes. Thank you. Smith, thank you very much for that. I don't know what I'd do without you. So we're going to take questions in just a few minutes. First, we're not going to go through the presentation. What I'm going to do is this is a lot of depth here that we have, and I would like to ask you, the audience, to help us out here. And Mike just mentioned a really important point. If you can find that hot button issue that's kind of universally accepted in your community, that's the button you go after. I would ask the audience to be thinking of what's a hot button issue that you can use in your community that would kind of have almost a universal appeal that would relate back to stopping HUD's affirmatively furthering fair housing. Whether it has to do with zoning, whether it has to do with moving apartment buildings into a residential area, whether it has to do with turning quarter-acre plots into plots that have to have, four or five families on each one. Whatever it might be, I'm going to ask you to submit that to me. Just send it to john@sustainablefreedomlab.org. That's just my name, John, with an H. john@sustainablefreedomlab.org. Please send your ideas in, because on our next program, we're going to share those ideas so that other people will have an opportunity to take advantage of them. Because I think that's so critical. Now, before we go to the questions, again, we'll hit presentation. We'll go through the presentation portion of this in our next podcast. But let me just say this: HUD is making massive inroads into your community. Affirmatively furthering fair housing is only the tip of the iceberg. It was like what they call the nose under the camel, camel's nose under the tent. Well, that's what it is. HUD defines AFFH as a platform to begin to take care of entire communities. And what they want to do now is not just build low-income housing, but they want to move that low-income housing into more affluent areas so that each HUD resident can participate in what they call upward mobility. They want to try to close the income gap by saying, if we can put a low-income housing next to, let's say, a $150,000 condo next to a $900,000 home, then when that person moves in there, they'll be able to take advantage of the same success that the people in that $900,000 home are able to take care of. Now, of course, that's insane. But they've got documentation that shows, oh, yeah, if we move them there, they're going to get better grades in school. HUD has also they've partnered with the Department of Transportation and the Department of Education. I don't know if you're aware of that or not. And in linking that together, they've now created a program called Economic Diversity. And the whole idea here is we have to take elementary and secondary classrooms and we have to rearrange them so that we have different socioeconomic groups represented in each class. Never mind what the educational needs are. They're more concerned about the financial mix that they've created, and as well as social and emotional learning, which is also tagged into this whole program. Now, what they're trying to do is close the income gap. And let me just explain, give you a little back knowledge here, something you might not be aware of. The income gap in America is growing. It dipped a little bit because it was so horrendous over the last year, but it did go down just slightly. But generally the trend is upward, and the reason is very simple. Because even though there's been a lot of jobs that have been created in America, those jobs have been at the high end and they've been at the low end. There's very few jobs in America that have been created in the middle. So what's happening, and this is a fact, as of 2015, the United States of America has the smallest middle class of any of the first world nations on the globe. We have the smallest middle class. In the 50s and the 60s, we had the largest middle class. It is that middle class that enables people to be economically mobile, to move from one to the other. Economic mobility, if anybody sat in on our socialism in America, economic mobility is what stops socialism. It prevents it. What the government is doing is using HUD to create a false form of economic mobility by moving people where they want them to go to place them in robotically in these homogenized communities. And that's what you're fighting for. I can't impress upon you. We're not just fighting for zoning rights. We're not just fighting to keep property rights. We're fighting for the very integrity and cultural existence that was here before in America, because that's what HUD is after right now. So what I'd like to do now, CJ, do we have any questions there to come in?
Yeah, sure, John. Just one second.
Okay. We're going to take a few questions right now, and I promise you we're going to follow this up. I don't have the exact date. It will probably be a Sunday or a Monday. We're going to have the next step in this, and I'll announce it in an email to everyone so we can go into that in more depth. Right now, can maybe have a question from our audience, please.
Here's the first question, John.
Go ahead.
Bornia, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, hi. I'm from Palm Springs, formerly from Costa Mesa, Newport Beach. And
oh,
I was
boy.
Wondering if I could have Mike's website or email address so that I can communicate with him since he's local.
We'll do that after the show. CJ, is there a way we can do that and we can get this to this lady? I don't want to do it over the air unless you have a public thing you want to release, Mike.
It's my my name, michaelhoskinson.com, so she's certainly welcome to go there.
Okay.
If you Google my name, I'm not hiding under a rock. I'm pretty easy to find. So, yeah, I would say you can go to my website there, and I think it's got all my contact information, but you can find me at City of Huntington Beach. I think just a search of my name on Google will bring up a wealth of information.
Very good. Thank you. Because I have in the Coachella Valley, we have like 9-10 cities, and I've been to all the city councils providing them documentation. But now that we're going to be having councils change again with this election, it's like reteaching them all over again.
Yeah,
and I
know
this is a wonderful thing, though. I wanted to thank you very much for doing this.
Well, you've got a bunch of strong Tea Party group presence on Facebook as well, because I'm a member of about three of them out there in the Palm Springs area. So I would say definitely you're probably already members of them, but to get networked with those folks, but I'm happy to help you offline with that.
I appreciate that, because the one that I was with is no longer active, so I do need to connect with some. So thank you, Mike. I'll be in touch.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for calling in. We appreciate it. Do we have another question?
Yeah, I'm from Michigan. We've been involved for several years, last three or four at least, in kind of aligning ourselves with the same kind of type of program you're trying to promote here. And we've been extremely unsuccessful. trying to get the local zoning commissions, local politicians, and we use the basis of Agenda 21 for our battle. One thing I'm going to tell you right now, based on the coming election, if Clinton gets in, they're going to run wild and do many end runs around this to get HUD's implementation process. Number two, the influx of refugees is going to fall right in line with this concerted housing, you know, ideology to ensure that they encapsulate those people. And number three, the only thing I would say, the HUD's guidebook, if you can put that on your website, see if that's obtainable, because again, the things that you've mentioned specifically will be very useful to us to implement our plans as we go down the road based on your guidelines.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me hop in there on that and just make a few points about it. Thank you so much for that great information you gave us. And I'm not that HUD guidebook, by the way, it's on my regular website. I'm not sure whether it's on this. I'll get it transferred over there. Thank you very much for that. Let me make this suggestion. You know, it's funny. I started several years ago talking about Agenda 21 and traveling around the country and giving presentations, as have so many other very fine people done a tremendous job with that. I don't really dwell too much on it these days. And the reason is, it's not that it's not true. It is. But the point is, by the time I get through trying to win the case on Agenda 21 and prove that I know what I'm talking about, I've already lost my audience and I've burned up all my capital. So what I really need to do is focus on the things that are going to affect people here, now, and today. And right now, this is HUD. HUD has handed us a gift-wrapped gift. And they're out of the closet now with this thing, and people are being burned, communities are getting hurt, and citizens are feeling the damage. That's what we have to talk about. Go where it hurts right now. We can always tie those other pieces in later on. But they are important pieces. I'm not trying to shortchange the value of them. But I think to win the case, go with their documentation and sink them by their own words. They have their own legalese, as Mike pointed out earlier, in the very documents that come from HUD that explain just how virulent this is and how much it's going to take away from local communities. Gentlemen, anyone else have something to jump in there with to answer the question from me?
Yeah, well, a thought, you know, and from our training, the Campaign for Liberty training, one of the things they talk to us about is politicians only have one goal, which is to stay in office. So if you can control the political landscape of either making them feel threatened that they're going to lose their job or actually losing their job, you will control the political landscape in your town. So I would say, if you're not getting any motion with these folks trying to speak plain language to them, it's time to threaten their jobs, you know, and that's something we can all help you with.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And every one of these gentlemen here is an expert at that. So we will all be, as you stay tuned to our various programs as we move forward. Now, another thing that you mentioned, I want to address the third one. What if Clinton gets into office? Well, you know, we certainly hope that's not going to happen. But if she does get into office, I just want you to know, we've already writing programs that will pass their tests, that we'll be able to continue broadcasting and get information out to people. So we're aware of this. We know what she can do. So we're trying to stay one step ahead of that. But if anything, with her being such, you know, bosom buddies with Julian Castro, the head of Secretary of HUD, you're absolutely right, sir. This is going to be on steroids once he gets into office. Well, there's a lot more of us than there are of them. And Mike gave you the magic. These people will do anything to hold on to their seats, local officials, so really we can be in control. Let me jump ahead. Is there one more question we can grab here?
This is Evelyn. I'm in from Colorado, and I'm Smith's associate working on this AFFH here.
Hi, Evelyn.
My question has to do with your comment about what HUD is already doing. I mean, we need to stop further stuff, but boy, if you look in Denver, I mean, we've got apartment warehouses, and they look like warehouses all over the place. And what I'm concerned about is there's no parking. They are putting stress on an already stressed infrastructure. They are expecting the community that takes these you know, low income housing into their community to put around their within a 3 mile or with a walking distance all kinds of amenities, so these people who, if they don't have cars, can still get what they need. The effort that is being put forth to kill our suburbs is just devastating. It's cities without suburbs is the war on suburbs that we're fighting here in Colorado big time.
Yes, there is. And one thing that I would do, and that's why we're doing this call, that's why we're going to do a lot more of them, and that's why we're getting a bigger audience. And I really can't say too much right now, but we're sitting on the cusp of getting really big with what we're doing right now. You're at the beginning point of something that's going to get very, very big, and we're going to give these people a run for their money. I promise you that.
We appreciate all your efforts. So, believe me.
Oh, hey, thank you. Thank you very much, Evelyn. I would take pictures of that, and I'd be marketing that. You know, Smith said something to me the other day about they had a meeting, and one of the attorneys said, well, we think right now the risk is worth it to take this HUD money. But, you know, Smith might say it better than I did, but they're saying, no, it's not worth the risk. The people don't know what the risk is, so let's start marketing that. Let's get it on billboards. Let's just spell out what these risks are and put it out there for the world to see. And that's what we need to do. We're in the right. We're in the right here. These guys are trying to take over what was once a wonderfully free capitalist society and turn it into communist central planning, and they're doing it. So we're coming at the back end of this thing, but we're saying, wait a minute, we're that little 30% that fought the Revolutionary War. Well, we don't need to do it with guns. We need to do it with brains and marketing and lots of people. So that's exactly what we're up to right now.
Amen.
Thank you. Listen, I'm going to wrap the program up right now. Al, thank you so much for being here. Al and Smith for your time, and Mike, all of you, thank you for being here and helping us out. I hope you'll consider coming back again, because the information you have given us is just invaluable. So we'd absolutely love to have you back on the program again.
I'm going to send you those questions, John, that we gathered that indicate that some people on official panels and councils don't understand.
The questions. Yeah, the questions that these public officials asked are so elemental, so simplistic, that it shows that they know absolutely nothing, and yet these people are in positions of authority. So again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for calling in tonight to be on this program. This is only the beginning. We have a big battle ahead of us, but I firmly believe that we can win this thing. Watch your inboxes, and we'll be sending you information on when our next program is going to be. This is John Anthony. This is Sustainable Freedom Lab, and I thank you very much for spending your evening with us.